That's good too. No, it's much more interesting. Well, unless you're playing the Australians. Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. If we could make a start. I've often said there's only two things wrong in financial reporting, and that's the income statement and the balance sheet. And part of the main problem, of course, is how we actually measure the various items that we show. Measurement's critical in accounting, and yet it's extremely underdeveloped. If you look at the conceptual frameworks, they're really just descriptions of various measurement bases, various types of cost or value measures. It doesn't help us as standard setters to choose what we intend to do in certain situations. So the objective of the conceptual framework measurement project, which this is part of, is to fill this gap, to try and help us with standard setting. Now, what we want to do and what we're doing in these round tables is to find your views before we start. That's why you haven't got a paper setting out a preliminary position. We haven't got one. This will have a minimal structure, this discussion. It's mainly brainstorming. There are questions at the back, which we'll use. But in the past, standard setters have simply made judgments, really from accepted practices. And the colour chart that we sent out with the IFRS balance sheet shows you all the different ways we can value or show costs for various types of assets and liabilities. Almost all of these we inherited. So we have this situation. There's a lot of variety. Kevin's going to take us through the milestones in this conceptual framework project, and then I'll come back to what will be the main thrust of this afternoon's discussions. Kevin.
Thank you. My apologies to those of you who are now here for the second time today. You have to hear me again, but that is your choice, and I need to say this for those who are here for the first and only time. I want to spend a little time with the attachments that were emailed to you, attachments 1 through 4C, I think we numbered them. Not that you can't read them on your own, but to give you a little insight into the thinking of the staff and into the development of the project so far. We have divided the measurement phase of the conceptual framework project into three parts or milestones. This is not something that's always done with the project, but we have done it for a couple of reasons. One, because we're talking about an area that was not developed in the original frameworks and needs a lot of work. And two, because it is a difficult and controversial area, and we want to take this phase on in parts and not try to solve everything all at once. In addition to showing you the milestones, we're showing you in advance the issues that we have identified for the boards. Now, these may change a bit as we go on. Already we've added some detail to some of the issues in the first milestone in which we are now engaged, but it will give you an idea of what we have in mind at this time. In this first milestone, we've attempted to identify measurement bases and give them definitions. Basically, we want to have a starting point that the boards are comfortable with and from which we can go on in the second milestone and evaluate the bases and try to select one or more and improve upon the situation that we currently have in practice. In the second milestone, we intend to use primarily the qualitative characteristics that are discussed in the preliminary views document representing the work done in phases A and B of the conceptual framework. But we are committed to using whatever evaluative criteria makes sense. In addition to the qualitative characteristics, we have already identified two other things that we're going to look at. One is capital maintenance concepts. We're going to revisit that issue. The second is the staff intends to look at measurement in basic terms and look to the scientific community, which has a lot of experience with measurement, to help us understand what constitutes good measurement, what constitutes a good measurement basis. In the third milestone, we'll start trying to make some conclusions. Two important questions that are there are, first of all, can we come up with one measurement basis that we think will work conceptually for everything? If not, can we come up with a mixed basis model that is better than the one we currently have and that makes more sense? If we come up with a mixed basis model, can we describe under what circumstances each of the bases chosen should be used? Even though this is a conceptual project, not a standard-setting project, we think at this point that in this project it will be important to consider practical problems to a greater extent than we might otherwise. Therefore, in the third milestone, we intend to look at some of the practical problems, depending upon the decision of the boards as to whether for the conceptual framework there will be one measurement basis or more than one. We will try to look at the practical problems of using what the board decides on for the conceptual framework. Now, if you would turn with me to the second attachment, this will show you the work the staff has done to date on identifying measurement bases. We decided early on that we couldn't simply come up with a list by looking at the standards or looking at the literature. The problem we ran into was a problem of communication. We have found so many instances in which a single term has been used to describe more than one measurement basis, or where more than one term has been used to describe the same measurement basis. Therefore, we decided that we needed to try to find terminology for the conceptual framework project that would help the boards communicate more clearly between among themselves and with the staff and with our constituencies. And that's what we have done in the left column. We then have definitions, and in the right column, we have tried to do a good job of taking the current terminology as we found it and associating it with the terminology we've proposed to use for this phase of the project. Now, we don't think that this is at all perfect, and it will certainly change by the time it is brought to the boards and after it's brought to the boards as well. We've already had suggestions for improving this from the roundtable sessions we've had thus far. In the third attachment, the staff has taken the list of measurement bases we came up with and tried to indicate whether each of these bases was a price or value, which is one kind of property we think is very important because of the basic economics from which our accounting comes. As we looked at our basic economics, we decided that economic decisions, which we're trying to provide valuable information for, are made using combinations of various prices and values. So we think it would be important as we go on in the second and third milestones of this phase to indicate whether a measurement basis candidate is a price or a value, or perhaps neither. Also, we have tried to indicate the basic time orientation of each basis, not necessarily the orientation of the inputs, because there are some that use both past, current, and future inputs, but of the resulting number from using a basis, what's the basic time frame orientation of that number? We think that that too may help us as we try to evaluate the bases in the second milestone. Now, attachments 4 and 5 are basically the same thing in different form. What we tried to do here was take a sample IFRS statement and use the accounts from it, and a sample US GAAP statement and take the accounts from it. What we wanted to see was where we are currently in practice in terms of the measurement bases that we were able to identify. And we have therefore tried to list these and reference them to various standards. Now, we don't claim to have done a perfect job. There has been disagreement among the staff and with board members that have consulted with us thus far on the accuracy of some of this. But I think the fact that we've not been able to come to an agreement before we presented this to you shows that it's difficult for us to talk about these and mean the same thing all the time. But in the end, that's not really the point of this exercise. The exercise was to let us see just where we are if we illustrate these bases in a more refined way than we usually have done in the past. The last attachment, the colored one that Sir David referred to, and I have a very colorful personal version of it here, is based on a slightly different IFRS sample financial statement. And the reason we did this is to make something we could look at visually on one page and show the impact of what was done in attachment 4. To try to see visually in one page what it is we're working with today. As the staff looked at this, we came to 3 conclusions. One is that some of the measurement bases that are currently proposed, some of which have been long proposed in accounting literature, are not represented in what we do today, even though they have many advocates. Secondly, the debate about measurement bases has often been framed in terms of historic cost versus current value, or historic cost versus fair value. And we think this illustrates that that is a gross oversimplification. Even though we talk that way, that's not what we're really dealing with. Thirdly, even though this represents what we're currently dealing with in practice, and so we assume that you're used to doing it, from a conceptual viewpoint, and this is a conceptual project, we think this is not satisfactory and that we need to simplify this situation. And with that, I'll turn the time back to David.
Thanks, Kevin. Well, as you've heard from Kevin, we very much have a mixed measurement system. Very few people we find are arguing for fair value for everything. Similarly, not many are arguing for historical cost for everything. The board is accused of being obsessed with fair value. If I could just quote from a Big Four book, the valuation approach that the IASB has embraced is rapidly introducing fair value as the primary basis for asset liability measurement. This means that financial reporting under IFRS largely involves a process of asset liability recognition, initial measurement of fair value, remeasurement again largely at fair value, and derecognition. Now, some of you might agree with that, and you'd be wrong as well. And basically, we are not introducing fair value at a rate of knots, nor is fair value in any way extensive. Most of this is long-standing requirements, is in UK GAAP, The one exception has been IS-39, which was introduced in 1999 before we started by ISC, and not all of these financial instruments are shown at fair value. Some would argue the need to keep estimates of liabilities up to date and impairments of fair values, but again, these are long-standing traditions in most countries. We normally think you shouldn't understate liabilities and you shouldn't overstate assets. We have misunderstandings in the press. I don't know if you read about British Airports Authority. They dropped quarterly reporting to escape the demands of IFRS, as they said. Under the standards, assets and liabilities, including property, must be shown at fair value in all accounts, and the change in value must be recorded in the profit and loss account. The CFO said it was in no way practical to do such frequent valuations of BAA's giant property portfolio, which includes Heathrow, Gatwick and Stansted. Well, this is undoubtedly true if it were true. The fact is we don't require quarterly or even annual revaluations of property. We allow them, provided they're kept up to date, but BAA didn't even use them. So I'm not quite sure what the problem was. We only require or allow the use of fair value in four situations: for the measurement of transactions at initial recognition, for allocation of the initial amounts on business acquisition, for recoverable amount, and for the subsequent measure of assets and liabilities. It's mandatory for derivatives, held for trading financial assets and liabilities, available for sale financial assets, and certain agricultural products. For all other assets, historical cost can be used, and most companies do use it. We do allow the fair value for some other assets and liabilities, but we equally prohibit it for intangible assets, inventories, goodwill, and virtually all liabilities, and even shares when the price is unreliable. We've introduced fair value in the fair value option, note option, IFRS 1, if it's difficult to get the cost, and two of our convergence projects, IFRS 2 on share-based payments, where we ask you to value the grant at grant date, and IFRS 5 with non-current assets held for sale. We've tried to simplify in certain situations, and what we're looking at today is, do you think there is one method of valuing that we could use for all assets and liabilities, or if there's to be more than one, which ones and when do we use it? So that's the discussion for this afternoon, and we'd very much welcome your views to help us shape not only the conceptual framework project, but the standards that will emanate from that. So who'd like to go first? Jochen. Wrote the joint working group paper, is that right, Jochen?
I did not wrote it, and if you would be properly informed, there are dissenting views, and one is one of the German delegation headed by me. In a sense, thank you that I'm able to volunteer, and you mentioned when I welcomed you that I represent trouble. I hope I'm not. In a sense, first, I would like to appreciate that the ISB is carrying out these kind of roundtables to get input. And I understand it as a kind of brainstorming. So no one should be fixed to any ideas, in a sense, neither, as you mentioned, neither to historical cost, neither to fair value, or something in between. And I refrain to raise some comments on the appendices, but just to say, I believe that the mass of measurement basis you note is to me a little bit artificial, because some are just distinctions from, I would say, basic concepts. But that's not the main point. What I would like to say is, in a sense, that I accept this kind of split in milestones, because for the only reason I believe that otherwise such a important project is not manageable over the time. I know that some people, some constituents, looking at that saying, oh, this is an artificial split. But I believe I agree with this, because it needs to be manageable. But at the end, and that's what I would ask you, at the end of the whole project, I believe you should look at all the results of the kind of individual phases you established, to look whether there are any cross-cutting issues, whether any implication, and then take really a view on that. So I believe whatever the results are of these phases, I believe you should look at it as kind of interim results and consider it finally. Measurement is just one part of the whole story, I think. Recognition or others, what do balance sheet and income statement really mean? There's a lot of discussion about that. To me, it's quite important that first there should be agreement what the objective of financial reporting is. I know that is quite general, relatively vague, but until we really understand what the objective is and what the user needs are, and I have my doubts about that, what the users really need, I believe everything is preliminary in a sense, and the conceptual framework discussion is not yet completed in a sense. So I believe there should also be then a thinking about and reconsideration if you together with the constituents come to the final conclusion what the reporting model really should mean. And I know that fair value is always an exciting topic. I have one principal issue on that, really going top down in a sense, that I have some doubts whether it's really the right concept to measure just assets and liabilities, let's say according to a full fair value model, and measure it all the time against the markets. I'm not convinced of that, in particular not for non-financial assets, and in particular not for liabilities. I mean, we have discussed this many times, I think previously in the joint working group, in the Standard Advisory Council. There's a major issue on liability on that. But the major point is, what is really the objective? Decision usefulness, okay, is it just future cash flow, projections, etc.? Analysts are saying, no, they have to do the work of valuing a company and not the accounting, as the accountants are the preparers in a sense. So I believe I have a problem to say there should be one measurement for all transactions. I believe the board should carefully review the transactions and the economic substance of such transaction, look for the right measurement basis. And in my mind, that's not always the exit price notion. In particular, as I mentioned again, I have a problem with, as I call it, operating assets or liabilities. I believe the concept is different. And also, I would argue that it's more important to understand what a company and entity is really doing with these kind of assets using synergy in the production process, et cetera, et cetera. So here, I believe entity-specific measurement basis might be more important when compared to measure, let's say, fixed assets versus the market, what they believe the price would be in an exit price notion if you sell it, because this asset is intended to be used by the management in the production process and not to be sold. Though I would distinguish this in such a way. I raised already, there is a need for a deep understanding of the user needs. And one of the big four companies are in the progress of developing or finalizing a survey with more than 50 analysts and investors to look what really the users are. It's not yet completed, but I hope this will be published in a sense in some time in due course. The preliminary results are that they are not looking just for fair values, and the results are in contrast to what the CFA Institute developed in their business reporting model, which was discussed in the last year also in the Standard Advisory Council. Yes, I believe there could be a mixed attribute model, and I think there might be, you're right, there might be implications. These need to be considered, but yes, I would look, as you wrote in the paper, that you should review for the individual transactions. I would not say balance sheet positions. I would look really for the substance of business transactions, how the valuation should be. And that could result, I believe, in a mixed measurement model, mixed attribute model. Though I do not believe that the right answer will be just one measurement basis. I believe neither historical cost. I can't imagine for derivatives historical cost, because generally there are no such cost. But on the other hand, I can't imagine, as I mentioned, fair value for all fixed assets, where they are really intended to be held and to be used. So I also ask the board to consider management intent, not in the way it's often used, in a sense, oh, that is not unbiased, it's misuse, etc. Quite often I have heard this notion that management intent just equals really misuse, in a sense. I do not believe that this is right. And from this conceptual point, it should be considered. I would like to stop here and not to get into a monologue, but you asked me to volunteer.
I did, and you volunteered excellently, Jochen. Thank you. I've got one or two questions there, but we probably ought to let one or two other people in, and then we can start. Thanks, Terry. If you wish to speak, could you do as Terry did, just stand your name tab up? Okay, Terry?
Yep, thanks, thanks, David. I just wanted to come back to something that Jochen was saying about information needs of users. But first, to say thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. We do think that this is fundamentally important that we get this right as we move forward to actually work out, you know, what we, how we apply different measurement-based candidates when we're looking at assets and liabilities as we develop standards going forward. And we think it's, again, absolutely right to get input to this very early on in the process. Yeah, I wanted to, and I hope that the quote that you read out was not from our book, although I can't be completely confident of that. Coming back to what Joachim's saying about you know, the importance of user information needs, what was kind of missing for us, looking at attachment one, for example, you have milestone one where we establish what are the possible candidate measurement bases. You have milestone two where you take the qualitative characteristics in the framework and apply those to the candidate bases. What's kind of missing for us is how you do that. What is the bridge from qualitative characteristics into possible measurement bases? And kind of initial thinking was that what we think is missing from that is really getting to grips with what are the information needs of users. And you know, some of that is continuing a dialogue with international analyst groups and so on. I think what occurred to us was that it would actually be really useful, and maybe some of this is happening already, but would be really useful to actually go and talk to some of the investor relations groups in some corporates and some financial institutions, maybe together with those, you know, with their analysts, and maybe that's the, you know, the survey that Joachim was referring to. Maybe that's starting to do some of that, but to really work out what it is that analysts and other users need. You know, we hear a lot of stuff around, analysts need fair values. We also hear some stuff around, well, analysts are really only interested in cash flows, or analysts are only interested in EPS. And I'm not sure if there has been a lot of research around that, but I think it would be really useful as you go forward and try and apply the characteristics to the possible measurement bases, that the board is able to really articulate in practice what is it that users need. Do they need fair value information? If they do need fair value information, does that information need to be on the balance sheet, or is disclosure good enough? You know, how does all that fit together in terms of what analysts are looking for in practice? Maybe just two more comments, I guess, by way of introduction. One of the questions that you raised, Kevin, in your introduction was, can we come up with a single measurement model for the entire balance sheet? And if we can't, then can we come up with an acceptable mixed measurement model? There is a kind of question that comes before that for us, which is actually, should we be aiming for a single measurement model? And I think that's probably something that we can come back later in the discussion. And the other thing from our perspective is there is a sort of fundamental linkage between how do you measure assets and liabilities on the balance sheet, and how do those changes get reported in terms of performance. So, you know, there's a clearly fundamental link between, you know, for example, if an asset or liability is measured at fair value on the balance sheet, those fair value changes go through a performance statement. How do we get the performance statement right to be able to distinguish between those kind of historical performance measures, if you like? So the measures may be based on realization of assets and consumption of assets. So that sort of historical way of measuring performance versus fair value changes, and how do you get that split right in the performance statement?
Thanks, Terry. We'll come back later on. I've got Liesl, Catherine, Stephen next.
I would like to reiterate what's been said earlier this morning, but which has been said by both Jochen and Terry too. We think that it's maybe a little premature to go along the shopping list, because we think that knowing what the objectives of financial reporting is would be essential to start the process to then select measurement bases and to agree on the objectives of financial reporting too, because from what we have seen in the debate about the first discussion papers on the framework, we're not quite sure that we have already a total agreement on what the objective is. Nevertheless, then we would come most likely to the idea that indeed you have a very extensive shopping list here, and that it might be less demonstrative, but however more to the point, to group those into families, as was said earlier today, so that we're more or less not debating about all the different versions of something where it might be just language or usage or whatever. And we would most likely end up with not just one measurement basis, but maybe not necessarily more than two, but maybe three or so, but not a dozen or so. Then again, what Terry made as a point, performance reporting, or the other thing, not the balance sheet, but the other financial statements parts, is going to be vital, how we go about those. And the word linkage has come up. The linkage is something which I think has been lost out of sight for quite a while. It's been on the agenda here and there, and you can dress it up in different ways too, but it's bound to be part of the argument too. What do we have as reporting unit, so to speak, as transaction unit? Because we have to see in many instances more than just one entry, and we have to see how the whole thing is depicted. Thank you.
Don't want to bother repeating things that other people have said. I agree that my immediate concern reading through the papers that were sent out was that the income statement issues were not present, particularly as the project that the board already has well underway on financial statement presentation is looking at the linkages between the different statements. That project has already taken that step, and I think that measurement has to be considered, while quite rightly focusing assets and liabilities, for users to be able to tell the boards what is most relevant to them. They will have to understand how those changes in value are reported, not just what the basis of measurement is for those values. And also particularly, obviously, to understand if a mixed measurement system is used, because they will need to then appreciate how any total figures that they decide to use for their analysis should be broken down. So I think is a very important element. I think a similar issue, which is perhaps for later on rather than here, are issues about disclosure. Because particularly when you come to, for example, the decisions that might be made later on about ranking the different bases, particularly for different assets and liabilities, where you could have a ranking where there's one obvious contender that's right way at the top, but you could have two that are near the top. You've got to pick one, if I can put it as bluntly as that. Does that mean the other one gets lost completely, or does it mean that actually its use is recognised and it's disclosed separately? In other words, disclosure not being a SOP to poor accounting in the primary statements, but that there is some extra useful information that should be included. And I think the other part of disclosure is to do with matching up relevance with the sufficient information so that people can appreciate the number in terms of faithful representation. That I think that also needs to be brought in. I actually don't particularly object to jumping into talking about some of the specific bases now, because I think there's a lot of the debate that's already gone on in relation to the first two chapters of the framework document have been jumping ahead a great deal to what the measurement debate is going to be. So I think it probably is right to start getting in there now. But I also agree with what others have been saying, that it's an iterative process and we have to go back and re-examine that in the light of the finalised determination on objectives. And I suppose getting down to some of the nitty-gritty, I would also just suggest that looking down that list, which is very helpful as a starting point, it's almost too complete in a way. I think I would argue there are some things on it that are not really measurement bases at all. I mean, for example, where you just have a line item that's just several different measurement bases added together, but they all happen to be called long-term assets. I don't think it's a measurement basis in itself. So I do wonder whether there are some quick wins to just cross some things off the list, which might help things a bit. And I suppose just finally, while also recognising the primary importance of assessing what the users of the financial statements actually need and want to understand from this information, when we get onto the practical implications, it would be nice to see a clearer demonstration that cost-benefit issues are going to be taken into account as well. Because I think there has to still be that balance maintained between the relevance of the information that's being presented and what analysts want, but then actually explaining the cost of that information to analysts and making sure that they're aware of that and that they still want that information on that, even if it's costing that much.
Thank you. Now, Stephen, what does the analyst think?
Thank you. I noticed some people have already said we need to talk to the analysts, and I'm one of the 50 people that was interviewed for the survey that Jochen mentioned. I think perhaps if I can say initially, though, that although the views of users are very important, you shouldn't always believe what all of them will say. If you go back 10 years, a lot of analysts and investors were against stock option expensing. Now they are very much for it, and you do have to educate users and not necessarily take everything they say as the truth. Present company accepted, of course. The other thing I'd like to say about, before I say about measurement, is the milestones. I noticed that the first milestone in the second section of that, are the measurement bases relevant to economic resource allocation decisions? There's nothing in here that talks about performance and profit. And I think that one of the key things that you need to focus on with measurement is how it's then presented in terms of measuring the performance of companies. I mean, I would have liked something along the lines of, does application of the measurement basis produce measures of income which are useful in decision-making by investors? Now, I know that what you've said probably covers it, but a more explicit look at the link between measurement and income, I think, would be very useful. Liesl mentioned it's not the time to do shopping lists and need to agree objectives first. I mean, personally, I think objectives are very easy, that the objective of a financial statement should be to produce information that's useful in decision-making by investors, and that's it. So I'm going to give a shopping list, having decided what the objective should be, and tell you my views on measurement. I think that investments should all be at fair value. Never understood this held to maturity distinction and why that should be at cost. I think that financial liability should also be at fair value. That's perhaps slightly controversial amongst users, and I'm sure I'm amongst a minority there, but then I think if users were shown the benefits of having liabilities at fair value, they would see the merits of that. I also think that that operating assets, a transactions-based approach that produces useful measures of income is what's really important. And this is where I have a problem with, for example, the application of fair value. Because people talk about the use of fair value, but then I find they never really relate it to, and so what does performance look like? That's most basic, I suppose. Performance then becomes an amount that includes the fair value change. Well, of course, you can exclude it, but if you exclude it, are you really getting a proper measure of performance, taking into account the usage of the asset during the period? So that leads me to a historic cost type approach for operations. I think there is important disclosures, though, to supplement that, which is information to help people forecast future CapEx, which is replacement cost, maintenance CapEx, whatever is necessary. I also think that it's important to disclose, in some cases, alternative use value. So if you have a property portfolio, the fair value of that portfolio on a net realizable value basis, I shouldn't say fair value, the net realizable value of the property portfolio would be very useful disclosures. There's certainly a lot of merit to replacement cost as an alternative to historic cost and the different forms of replacement cost, but personally, I doubt very much whether that's workable in today's business environment. Companies change rapidly. They have to react to different business opportunities, and the concept of replacing an asset and maintaining operating capability, I think it might have worked 30 years ago, but then we abandoned it then as well, and I don't think it would work today with the way in which business is structured. However, having said that, so that takes me back to historic cost. Having said that, though, I would love to see somebody demonstrate to me how fair value could be used for operating assets, what I would call strategic operating assets, because I recognize the importance of property portfolios, of telecom licenses, and how these things could be better presented within a fair value model. One of the current problems that we're having is with all these opco, propco structures where people are separating operations from property, from the property element of a business, and how to interpret those when some people have got the property on the balance sheet, others are there, but it's in a separate division, others have it off the balance sheet in a separate joint venture, and it becomes very, very difficult to analyze those types of businesses. And I'd love the Measurement Basis Project to provide us a solution to that type of problem. Okay, all for now.
Stephen, Rifad, were you going to come in?
Most of it has been covered, except that I thought that by looking at the users, is it the users as defined, like, you know, the investors, the creditors, and their advisors, or is it a broader stakeholders? You know, because I don't think that only looking at the attributes by themselves in vacuum would help, rather than looking at who the information has been addressed to. That's their usefulness of their decision making. The accountability bit, I've heard it just now, and I agree to that. But then it's who are the users? And if we look at the conceptual framework already existing in international accounting standards, it is addressed to global users in global capital markets. And that's where then we raise issues like SMEs and emerging markets coming into the picture. So who are the users, I think, is an issue that we need to debate. Is it a broader one or just a narrow definition of it? Thank you.
Chris, I see you there, Mary. I'm going to try and get as many people to come in first, and then we'll go for questions, if that's okay.
Thank you, David. Chris Wobshaw from the Chartered Institute of Public Finance and Accountancy. Therefore, not surprisingly, I'm talking from a public sector perspective. One of the questions on the list of questions was whether a basis could be chosen that would be applicable to all sectors. That's a difficult question to answer, but clearly from our perspective, we would like a basis that was certainly applicable to the public sector. Before I carry on, I mean, all the comments that have been made about, is it right to be trying to try and pick one measurement basis? Are we talking about picking a measurement basis, or are we talking about setting a principle for measuring? I think we would agree with all the comments. And I say that particularly because in the public sector, particularly the central government sector, but the public sector generally, we have a tendency, as you know, to favor current cost accounting. Fair value, of course, is not a method that we can easily use for current cost accounting because fair value depends on trading in the marketplace, which often, if not usually, does not apply to the public sector. But nevertheless, we feel that current cost accounting and therefore measurement on a current cost basis is the appropriate method that recognizes the use of assets and the incurring of liabilities in the government and public sector. So as a matter of principle, we would favor current cost accounting. I know it's not universally applied in the public sector in the UK, and there are particular reasons why it's not applied everywhere, particularly some assets in local authority accounting. But when we're talking about whether or not you're using historic cost or current cost accounting, I think we'd say that was perhaps a matter of cost benefit, as Catherine said, i.e. whether it's cost effective to use current cost accounting, and sometimes a matter of pragmatism. And you also get into issues at that stage of distinguishing between initial recognition and recognition later on. And it may be not material to talk about whether you're considering initial recognition at current cost or historic cost, because the difference between historic cost and current cost at initial recognition may not be material. So having said all that, we're generally in favor of current cost accounting. And from the list, I mean, we did say to ourselves, is it right to be picking a particular approach? But from the list that you have there, value to the business or deprival value or relief value would therefore seem to meet our public sector view of the world, so that you can measure, you're measuring assets and liabilities at the lower replacement cost and recoverable amount. We're not saying there aren't difficulties with actually using that in practice, and depreciated replacement cost or replacement cost is a method that's often used as a proxy for value to the business in the public sector. And it does represent, we feel, the service potential of assets in the public sector. So rather than looking for a market value, we're looking for the service potential, i.e. what are the assets being used in order to deliver a public sector benefit. So if we wanted to pick a methodology that would be applicable to the public sector, and we believe would probably address a lot of the practical issues in the private sector in valuing assets, we would go for deprival value, relief value, value to the business. Looking through papers, particularly the ICAW paper on the problems and the downsides and the difficulties of using any measurement basis, there are problems with all of them. And I think I read somewhere that you can use depreciated replacement costs as a proxy for fair value. So, you know, in that sense, I'm not, you know, we're not sure whether fair value or current cost is the principle, but it seems to us that current cost is the principle. Once you decide that, then there are going to be pragmatic problems in implementing it, whatever sector you're in. But we would stick with current cost as a principle, or suggest that that might be the principle. And in all cases, whatever method you use, there are going to be pragmatic problems in implementing it. And I would repeat Catherine's point again, that the cost benefit of using current cost needs to be taken into account, so that you may end up using historic cost and circumstances because the costs outweigh the benefits of using current costs, but that doesn't mean the principle is not current costs. I hope that helps. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. The public sector, of course, doesn't have much in the way of investments as such, but I'm going to ask you later on with Stephen's view about the operating assets, because you're obviously going for a current cost value of operating assets. Others who would like to come in at this stage? Nicholas?
I'm representing the European Bankers Federation and the European Savings Banks Group and European Association of Cooperative Banks and European Association of Public Banks. Just to say that we've been working a lot with measurement lately, latest years, and discussed and try to come up with a common view in the banking sector. And I liked very much what Josh was saying and what Terry was saying. It's the same thoughts that we have had when we have discussed the different measurement spaces. We really feel that we need to focus on the purpose of performance reporting, for instance. What do we want to achieve with that? And we also need to focus on users' needs. It's quite a difference, we think, between the equity investors compared to the debt investors, for instance. the debt investors are more focused on being sure that the customer lent money actually repay, while the equity investors more focus on the value creation and so on. And it, due to that, we need to be able to present information for both users and others as well to fulfill their needs. And then you come into the where do you want to display fair values, for instance. Is it always right to present them in the statement of performance, or is it better to try, for instance, in a banking book where you know that you have your loans until final maturity and you fund them and have the debt until final maturity and so on and had created fixed cash flows that are certain? Is it really relevant then to distort that cash flows with fair values that will never be realized as cash flows? On the other hand, if you look at the trading area where you actually realize those changes in fair value, then we believe it's more reasonable to use fair values because they might in the end result in actual cash flows. I think also it's important to look at the unit of account. The financial sector is becoming more and more complicated, and we're actually reusing the same assets for several different usage. For instance, we normally transform one external FX forward contract to 40 internal transactions in our accounts. We eliminate them, of course, afterwards, but just to display the complexity where a lot of things are transferred to different entities within a bank for different purposes and so on, you really need to think about perhaps it's not the whole asset or liability that is the right unit of account. Perhaps you should focus on risk factors instead. And also, when you focus on risk factors, think a little bit about why do we have liquid markets for some instruments and why do we not have liquid markets for others? Because there might be reasons behind banking books and trading books and so on. Yeah, and really like to stop now by saying that I really like that you said that you will want to look at the practical issues because it might be theoretically perfect to do something, but if it's in practice impossible to come up with a fair value, for instance, is it really worthwhile doing it when it will be a subjective value?